This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Oh, yeah, it is the moment you have been waiting for.
Don't get me wrong. I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
Andy's out. Ryan and Brad are in.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
This is the Manny Fry Show.
Oh, man, we're pretty proud of that. This is Ryan and Brad. As the new open just said, now it's just the new open because Andy's not here today. We thought we'd have a little fun. We call it the Manny Fry Show because it is Brad, it is Ryan, it is Ethan. Annie has the day off. We are having a little fun. I don't know about you. This is just a crazy time to be alive. And being in news is something else. People come up to me all the time and just want to talk about what they're experiencing. You know, I think we're all just experiencing different things than we're used to. And it's because of the politics. You know, this isn't like, oh, world events are happening and they have nothing to do with the president. Like, this is the president leading the change. And it's got everybody a little nervous. I was talking to a relative of mine this weekend, and I asked him, because I own some real estate and do business in real estate, he works in the mortgage industry. I said, you know, what do you think is happening? Like, what's the consensus in the mortgage industry at large as to which direction things are headed? And he said, man, we have no freaking clue.
We don't know.
No, they have no idea. And he said, we usually get about one or two emails a week from corporate just kind of saying, this is kind of what's going on. This is what we feel like's happening right now. Just be aware of blah, blah, blah. He said, we're getting one to two to three emails per day saying, well, okay, this is how we think we should handle this. I mean, I laugh because what else are you going to do? I mean, if you're in these industries or you're really worried about the stock market, you know, that's not a really safe feeling. But we're all in this together, and as Elon Musk has said before, I think it's a great quote, if the ship of America sinks, everybody sinks with it. There is no backup plan.
Right.
He's the one that could take us to Mars, and he says, it ain't going to happen. So today's YouTube live chat poll is, do you feel safe in 2025? I get it. A lot of you commenting, context is everything. What exactly do you mean by do you feel safe? Well, that's up to you. Is it referring to the market? Is it referring to political violence? Do you drive a Tesla? Are you the governor of Pennsylvania? You know, there's a lot of ways that you, I don't think that you are, but if you are, how do you feel safe in 2025.
So if you are, hi, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shapiro. Appreciate you tuning into this show in St. Louis, Missouri. But we want to know, do you feel safe in 2025? And the options are, I'm feeling safer, I'm feeling less safe, kind of the two trends that it could be, or I feel about the same. And again, as same as what, you know, like this is all in the eyes of the beholder here, but we'd just like to know. And that's, of course, where the comments come in. Let us know what you are feeling and why you said what you said. Brad, it sounds like, before we get into all this, because we got a lot here, I got a lot of stuff. We have a very full show. Cully Simpson's coming up next, legal fellow at Heritage. We're going to talk about that ruling with the Supreme Court that they got to bring back that MS-13 guy. We're going to talk about that. Steve Moore the next hour, Ryan Schmelz. We're going to talk about the big, beautiful bill and what's all in that and where it's at. But before we get there, Brad, it sounds like just fish fry Friday. You went out, so I could interview Mark Reardon for the same reason, but you went out to Millstatt.
Yeah,
and Millstatt. It sounds like it was a really good time.
Yeah, it was a really good time. A lot of you, some of you listening know, a lot of you don't know. I grew up in Millstatt. I lived there until the middle, about my seventh grade year. So whenever I heard they were going to be at Otz's Tavern out there, I was like, oh, man, I grew up in that place. So
and you knew how to pronounce it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's the correct way. That's the way we pronounce it in Millstatt.
Okay.
Otz's, not Otz.
Well, so, we were all saying Otz, so right. Oh, Brad's from there, though. He knows.
Yeah, well, I don't know that it carries any more weight, or if we're just mispronouncing it. At any rate, we went up there. The food is amazing. If you haven't been up there, go by the Otz. It's called the Millstatt Fish Stand in the back of Otz's Tavern. There's a little rock beer garden out there. You go order your food. They've got Otz's sauce, which is, it's a secret sauce. It's really good. Still tastes the same as it did whenever I was a little kid. So the food is really good. But going back up there, I met a lot of people that I hadn't seen since I was a little kid. So like you look at them and you're like, I do recognize you. Oh yeah, this is who you are. So hi to everybody that I saw out there. It was good seeing
That's
you.
Fun.
It was good talking to you guys again. And then got to tell a couple stories about growing up in that area and what it was like and how like in a town of 4,000, everybody knows everybody.
Still so, that way?
It absolutely is. Yeah. All the businesses are owned by people who know the other people that own the businesses.
Now, whenever we have an event with 97.1, whether it be show-related, like if we're out at Ruler Foods or something like that, or in the case of the Fish Fries, that was a Mark Reardon show event. Mark Cox does a lot of appearances with Heroes Care and things. Mm-hmm, I mean, yeah. We do too, but you know, this is the different events that we have going on all the time. We always get like a Monday email if it's a weekend of here's how it went, here's some pictures, you know, thanks to everybody who participated and put this thing on. And it sounds like the fish fries went really, really well. So thanks for everybody to coming out. It sounds like the Millstatt one was really packed.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, there was a lot of people out there. Yeah, that place is always packed, especially on a Friday in Lent. Millstatt is an old school Catholic German town, so lots of Catholics there. You eat fish on Fridays, and like I said, the Millstatt fish stand is phenomenal.
The question of the day again is, do you feel safe in 2025? Again, a lot of ways to interpret that. Charles Payne has a great quote here. I want to play it, talking about people feeling nervous.
I dissected this market in several ways. First and foremost, the earnings from Delta this morning were phenomenal.
Oh.
So we keep getting this soft data on how consumers are recoiling. Well, how did they recoil? Delta's earnings were phenomenal. A 20% spike in mortgages to purchase homes.
Mm.
So people are maybe telling folks that they're nervous, but they're going about their business. They have been so far in a positive way.
So I pulled this article up from Victor Davis Hanson. He's kind of went viral recently for talking about the positive side of the tariffs. He's an economist. He wrote this for American Greatness. And it's a bunch of questions that are basically rhetorical, but they're asking you to consider these questions. He's asking you to consider these questions when you think about the tariffs. I thought it was valuable. And I'll just go through them one by one. First of all, Trump's so-called trade war. Many call the American effort to obtain either tariff parity or a reduction in the roughly $1 trillion trade deficit and 50 years of consecutive trade deficits a trade war. But then what do they call the policies of the past half century by Europe, Asia, China, and others to ensure asymmetrical tariffs? Pseudo health and security trade restrictions and large surpluses? What would you call that? Trade peace? They were clearly not acting in our best interest. They were acting in their own best interest.
Right.
So his question is, why would we not do the same?
I mean, he makes a great point there. I know it's kind of a rhetorical question, but
yeah.
It's a solid point because I think of it like this. Imagine you're walking down the street and somebody comes up and starts assaulting you. Is the right thing to do not to defend yourself?
Is it just, well, I seek peace.
Yeah.
You know, I it's a good question, and it's one that we don't ask enough. And here's the deal, and I'll read a couple more of these because I think there's a lot to this, but we don't even know how to ask questions about the tariffs because this was on nobody's radar except for Donald Trump's. Mm. Now, it's not that he didn't do any of this in his first term. It's just that he didn't go to this length in his first term because I don't think he was ready to go to these lengths in his first term. He's been talking about this for 30, 40 years, so that's not new. But as far as using tariffs or solving these problems, the imbalance of trade, some economists say we don't care. We don't care that there is an imbalance of trade. But a lot of American workers do. I tell you what, the unions do. They very much care. And people who've lost their jobs for the last 35 years very much care about these things. So Wall Street, yeah, they're not going to care as much. They want bottom line constantly. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's what they're there to do. But the people who are working don't care as much about the C-suite as they do about their own jobs. And this is the first president who's stepping up and saying, and his whole cabinet's saying this. It's not just him. It's not like he's messaging. They're acting out, caring about the working class. There was a clip last week from Scott Bessent. Now, if I met Scott Bessent before he was the Treasury Secretary, I would not think, oh, he's a working class hero. This guy looks like the epitome of a Wall Street character. That's what he looks like. But he said last week something that I just can't shake. And I even was talking about it with my wife this weekend. I'm like, there's something really important about this. He said, and I'll get the numbers close. I may not get them exactly right. He said that 88% of the stock market is owned by 8% of the population. Mm-hmm. 88% of the stock market is owned by 8% of the population. Then you have 42% that owns 12% of the stock market. And that's all of it. That's all of the stock market owned by basically 50% of the population, but really 8% that owns almost all of it.
The
rest of it, which would be probably you listening, maybe you listen. I mean, not everybody, but if you have an IRA, if you have a 401k, you have a little share of that. You're part of the 12%. You're trying to save away something for retirement. You're being responsible. You're looking at your accounts, maybe right now, especially if you're close to retirement, you're going, oh, gosh, this is really scary because you wanted to be taking money out and your portfolio's dropped. You're probably in that 12%. But Scott Bessent went further and said one more thing that really hit home, and it's that 50% of the population owns nothing. Not just of the stock market. They really don't own anything.
Was he saying debt?
He said, yeah, that's exactly what he said. He said 50% of the population, if you're not part of the 50 that owns any of the stock market, you're basically just in debt. You don't really own anything. In fact, you owe everything. Mm-hmm. You owe everything you have. You're either paying off your house. If you're lucky, you might own some of your house. You might have a little equity in your house. But more likely, you're probably renting. You're probably paying off a car. Maybe you have a car at best. But that's 50% of the population.
Well, right. And when you calculate net worth, it's what your assets are minus your debt. And so even like if you are buying a house and you've paid off your cars aren't going to offset the debt that is still owed on your home.
Yeah. And that may be some of the 12% too, because he's talking also about just people who own the stock market. But basically what he's saying is if you really start to parse out the American economy, there's 50% of our entire population that is just getting hit by every angle.
Right.
Your food's going up. Your cars are going up. Your rent's going up. If you have a mortgage that's locked in, God bless you, because it just went up too. And that's what they're thinking about when they're doing this whole economic thing. And that's what Victor Davis Hanson is kind of hitting on with all these points, which we're not going to get to all of them, but just a couple more. He says, you know what? I'm going to flip over to the ones that really matter because he's talking more about the national scope of things. But I like this one a lot. It says, what if wages went up at the rate of the stock market? Rhetorical question, of course. But that hasn't happened. What's weird is there was this massive transfer of wealth in 2020, 2021, where they printed all this money. And they told us all, well, we have to do this, otherwise the economy would collapse. Well, okay, you convinced everybody to do it, and it was bipartisan. I'm not saying that Trump wasn't a part of that in 2020, but they doubled down on it in 2021. They spent even more. And you know where all that money went? Straight to the top.
Yep.
Straight to the top. And you know what? Where all that money didn't go? Anywhere near that bottom 50%. Right. All it did to them was it increased inflation. It made everything cost more. And if you are trying to pay off anything, you know, your interest rates are higher. It's just been terrible for the bottom 50%. And it used to be you'd talk about the bottom 20 or the bottom 30. Mm-hmm. Scott Bessent saying, no, we have a bottom 50% that doesn't own anything.
Right.
That's a bad place to be in America. And so the overarching goal of this whole article, and hopefully the tariffs in general, is that he's trying to reset everything. Will it work? I don't know. Like I said, he's doing stuff that none of us were even thinking about. Nobody was thinking about, oh, gosh, we really need to fix the trade balance with China. Nobody was saying it. If they were, they were kind of marginalized. Right. Everybody knew China was an issue, but you really didn't know how you're going to solve it because you're like, I'm not going to keep them from making my seeing spells for my kids. I want Christmas presents, and they're cheap. So what are you going to do about it? Trump's doing it, and it's going to be maybe painful. Another question he asks is Wall Street's panic based on what might happen or what is happening? Is this reaction to March's latest jobs reports that there were 93,000 more jobs created than predicted? Was the Wall Street panic predicated on reports of much lower oil prices? Did the fear arise over the March inflation report that the annualized inflation dipped to 2.6%? Keep in mind what he's saying, and he goes through a whole bunch more of these numbers. All the other economic numbers actually are pretty decent, if not good. It's the big Wall Street numbers that are scaring everybody. And it's easy to look at the market and say, oh man, that's in the red, and say, that's the economy. Well, it's not entirely. It could affect the economy. Mm-hmm. We're not saying it can't, but that's not where things are at right now. So the question is the panic justified? Is cutting billions, maybe trillions of dollars from the U.S. government budget bad for the economy? Well, short term, when you know that all the job growth over the last 4 years has been government jobs, yeah, that's kind of bad, but it's not long term bad. Mm-hmm. It's long term good. So the question is, how fast is this going to turn around? Are we going to have to go through a little bit of pain? We're going to have to go through a lot of pain? I don't know. Nobody knows the answer to that question.
Well, the thing that you have to remember, too, is the pain can't be too long or you won't get a chance to see it to the end because elections happen every 2 years.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's a big gamble, but he's been saying that he wanted to do it since he was on Oprah in 1987.
Yeah, for sure.
So the fact that he didn't do it in his first term and the fact that he had a term off to prepare, that's why he's doing this stuff so fast. That's the goal. The question is, will we get there, and will we get there fast enough? It's a good point, Brad. He's only got 4 years. Well, he's only got 2 years before midterms.
Yeah.
Hopefully, by the time we get to the midterms, the pain will be in the rearview mirror, but that remains to be seen. This is the Manny Fry Show. Ryan and Brad in with you. Like I said, we have a very, very full show and some fun stuff later. I don't know if you watched SNL this weekend. There's some good and there's some bad. We'll play both later in the show. Cully Simpson is the senior legal fellow at Heritage. We're going to talk about some of the Supreme Court decisions that have come down recently. That's coming up next.
I dissected this market in several ways. First and foremost, the earnings from Delta this morning were phenomenal.
Oh.
So we keep getting this soft data on how consumers are recoiling. Well, how did they recoil? Delta's earnings were phenomenal. A 20% spike in mortgages to purchase homes.
Mm.
So people are maybe telling folks that they're nervous, but they're going about their business. They have been so far in a positive way.
Well, we've been talking about the economy a little bit in this first segment here on the Annie Fry Show. Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie. We've got Cully Simpson on the phone right now to talk some legal. He's the senior legal fellow at Heritage. Cully, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you.
Cully, let's talk a little bit about this Supreme Court case that over the weekend got a lot of headlines, and I was reading into it, and I still am a little bit unsure what everybody's position is on this just explain the situation. This guy that got deported to El Salvador, but now they're saying, no, you got to legally bring him back. What's the deal with this?
Yeah. So he was here illegally in the country. He faced deportation hearings. He got a deportation order and final order of removal during the previous administration. They didn't kick him out because he didn't show up for his deportation flight home. The Trump administration sent him to El Salvador. ACLU and others ran to court and said, wait, wrong guy, shouldn't deport him. And they got a district court judge to say that the Trump administration need to bring him back. That got appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, understanding that they can't order the commander-in-chief to do things like that, said that the Trump administration should attempt to facilitate his return. It just so happens that the president of El Salvador was coming to the White House today. They had the meeting. The president asked for him to send him back, and the president of El Salvador, President Bukele, said, I'm not doing that. Why would I send a terrorist back to your country? How can I import a terrorist into your country? That's the end of it.
So, Cully, what I keep reading, though, from the mainstream news, which is not always the most pro-Trump, they seem to have a bit of a slant at times, is that Trump is openly defying the court. Is that what's happening?
No. The high court was very clear that the administration needed to attempt to facilitate the return. The way a chief executive of a country facilitates something is you ask the chief executive of the other country where the person is, can I have him back? If the person says no, that's the end of the discussion. You don't send the Navy SEALs in, break them out of a prison, bring them back on a C-130 and say, we facilitated it. Thank you, Supreme Court. We're going to kidnap people from foreign countries. You ask the sovereign of the foreign country. And if the sovereign says no, that's the end of it.
Cully, you know, I think would be helpful is when we talk about these district courts and Supreme Court, obviously everybody knows the Supreme Court's at the top, but what is the line of succession? Are they bringing it to the people right below the Supreme Court and then the Supreme Court has to overturn it? Or are there courts in between the district and the Supreme? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. So remember, under the Constitution, under Article 3, it sets up a Supreme Court. That's it. Doesn't say how many justices. And then it says, and lower courts as the Congress shall decide. And so because of the Judiciary Act of 1789 and other acts since then, they've created the federal circuit courts around the country. And they also have created federal district court. Think of them as trial judges. And there's hundreds of them spread around the country. And what has happened, especially during the Trump administration, is left-wing liberal advocates will look for a blue state, supposed left-wing, left-leaning federal district court judge, file a case in front of her or him, and then get a ruling in their favor, knowing that if they do a temporary injunction or so-called nationwide injunction, that slows the Trump administration down to a complete halt. That can be appealed to the circuit court, but, you know, there's a dozen of them around the country, and there's only one Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court only takes, you know, 60, 70 cases a year. So they know that if they flood the zone with all these cases before these liberal federal district court judges, that they're going to thwart the momentum of the Trump administration.
So they've been fairly successful at doing that, but they keep bringing them to the district courts. Does that mean the Trump administration, the White House, can then appeal those at the circuit court level before it goes to the Supreme Court? And are they doing that?
That's the way the ball bounces. You got to start in the district court. You got to start in the trial court. Trial courts are supposed to build a record. They're the finders of fact. And then the losing party, in most instances, can appeal to the circuit court, the appeals courts. Those are not finders of fact. They rule on the law only. There's no juries. There's no witnesses, et cetera. They're just arguments by counsel. And then the losing party there, in most instances, can try to ask the Supreme Court, please take our case. But the Supreme Court takes cases at their own discretion. That's what called a certificate or a petition for certiorari. That means please take my case. 6,000-7,000 cases, people, litigants ask for their case to go to the Supreme Court. 60 or 70 get taken up every year. So 10% shot.
Cully Stimson is on the phone with a senior legal fellow at Heritage. So in your view, Cully, who is winning this battle right now? Is the Trump administration, you know, yes, it's slowing it down, but they're eventually winning these cases? Or is the left actually stopping the Trump agenda?
Well, they're certainly trying. And when you have, for example, Judge Reyes here in the District of Columbia, after Trump issued the ban on people with gender dysphoria from serving on active duty in the military, and Secretary Pete Hegseth issued a DOD directive to that effect, she ruled and issued a temporary injunction against the Trump administration. So apparently she's playing junior admiral in the Navy, so they cannot process people with gender dysphoria, which is a mental health disorder, out of the military. And the cases go on and on and on. And so the Trump administration was smart. They had 4 years in the wilderness to try to prepare for Trump 2.0. They flooded the zone themselves with a tsunami of executive orders. And the left has started to get their act together. And they've been, you know, the resistance is alive and well. So it's an ongoing battle. And I suspect, knowing the left as I do, they will continue that for all 4 years.
You know, we've seen a lot of bluster in Congress about them saying, well, we need to stop activist judges from single-handedly, you know, stopping an elected president from carrying out what the people voted for. But is Congress able to, and are they actually moving toward doing anything to stop this process or to change it?
Well, yeah, two quick points. First answer is yes. Actually, Heritage came up with an idea in 2017. My colleague Hans von Spakovsky, who's on this radio program all the time, wrote a paper and testified about how instead of just letting one judge issue a temporary injunction or a nationwide injunction to cover the whole country, you should do what you do in the voting rights area, and that is have three federal district court judges get together for any case where the person is asking for a nationwide injunction, and then the losing party can immediately appeal to the Supreme Court, in other words, skip over the courts of appeals. That has been drafted into a bill. That bill has now passed. It's called the SAVE Act, the House. So we'll see, because the Senate and the House are out for 2 weeks, we'll see whether the Senate takes it up and they can get it over the 60-vote margin. The other thing to point out is the remedy for curing a bad opinion tends in the past to be appealing that opinion. But some of these opinions are so far out of the mainstream that a SAVE Act is a remedy that the House has now passed and the Senate should seriously consider. Because, by the way, it works both ways, right? The left complained when red states were suing the Biden administration for things like, for example, you know, Biden illegally just paying off student loans, and they stopped him. He lost at the Supreme Court. And so I suspect if the lefties actually think about it, they actually would be support the SAVE Act.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another major news item that's working its way through, obviously, through Congress. Like you said, the House has already passed it. Will the Senate pass it? Will they get over the filibuster to be able to pass it? But the argument that I keep seeing, and I'm hoping you could shed some light on this, because I genuinely don't know. They're saying, the left is saying, well, we can't pass the SAVE Act because it would make it harder for women to vote. Is that true?
Of course not. Of course not. Last time I checked, you and I and everyone we know who's 16 or older has to have a real ID compliant ID. Usually you get it through your DMV. I'm married. I don't know if you're married, but my wife, who's a professional, she didn't have a hard time voting. No one I know has a hard time voting. It's the same canard about requiring voter ID. It's the same tried and true and fake response that, well, you know, if you require a voter ID to vote, totals, especially in the black community, is going to go down. Of course, as soon as those states rolled those things out, Indiana, North Carolina, Georgia, vote totals went up in those communities. They also offered those IDs for free. So No one's going to be denied. And by the way, don't women have jobs? Because last time I checked, they do. And to get a job, they have to prove that they're lawfully able to work in this country, which means they have to have already shown the proof of citizenship or work authorization. So it's a complete farce, and it's meant to give them the patina of a fig leaf to vote against it.
Yeah, it seems like the argument, and this, I didn't want to just assume this, but I mean, we've seen this playbook enough times that I'm like, well, I figure that's what it is. That the argument was, at its core, you know, we think that white men are the only people smart enough to get IDs. I mean, that's what it seemed to boil down to. And I'm like, that can't be the Democrat argument, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, but they've used it before. Remember when Indiana passed a voter ID law, Georgia passed a voter ID law, The best argument they could come up with was, well, this is confusing. It'll drive down the black vote. It's expensive. So they made them free. They provided them transportation to get the ID. No one hardly took them up on that. And the vote totals in the African-American community went up. And so there's no there, but they'll keep trotting out the same argument because for some reason their political consultants say it's working. It's not. It's actually boomeranging against them.
Cully, before,
no one buys it.
Yeah. I mean, again, I try to approach these things and think, well, maybe, you know, is there a realistic, you know, argument against this? But I just couldn't find it. So I wanted to ask.
I can't find it.
Especially in light of states having done these things and voter turnout going up. I mean, there really is no argument against it. Cully, before we run out of time with you, though, your book, I want to just ask you to just you know, give us kind of an idea about your book, because I love the topic, Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities. What do people get when they buy this book?
Well, you get a whole chapter on Kim Gardner, your former DA there. It's a true crime novel. So it's like a John Grisham-y type novel, but we focus on 8 cities where there were Soros bought and paid for rogue prosecutors and tell true crime stories that happened in those cities that would not have happened had they been law and order DAs. We also trace in the first chapter the origins, playbook, and belief of the movement. Comes out of the prison abolitionist movement, comes out of the belief that if you send somebody to prison, it's a modern day slave plantation. Those are their words, not my words. And the second chapter traces all the money paid by the billionaires, including Soros, to buy these prosecutors, $50 million or more in direct spending and about $1 billion in indirect spending. And then the last chapter is the way forward and how you can identify a Soros-type candidate and make sure that you do the right thing and don't put them in office in the first place.
I know I said that was a lot.
Audible, by the way, too.
Real quick, though. A lot of these NGOs, this is a totally different, huge topic, so I know there's no time, but is a lot of this money that's funding these things, is this starting to dry up?
No, not on the Soros Road prosecutors. In fact, his son Alex said he's going to double down. And so look for so-called safety and justice PACs at the state level, because those are the Soros front machines to fund these radical rogues who are pro-criminal, anti-victim, and cop haters.
Thanks for shooting straight with us, Cully Stimson. I appreciate your time, and you're always invited to come back to St. Louis and see how it's doing. Hopefully, from your outsider's perspective, we're turning the corner.
Would love it. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Cully. Senior fellow at Heritage and a legal mind that we love here on the Annie Fry Show. I haven't talked to him in a while, Brad. Appreciate you getting him on for this Manny Fry Show. So in light of it being Annie Fry free on the Annie Fry Show today, we are going to have Wiggins America coming up next. But the way that we do this when I'm hosting is that Ethan takes over Wiggins America. And so he will have the Monday Roundup coming up next on the Annie Fry Show.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a tough song to listen to with kids because you got to find the clean version. There's a lot of edits in that song. You had to find the clean version for playing on the radio, yeah. Too.
I got really excited when I heard that you had new Manny Fry show opens because I was like, oh, this is the perfect song for a Wiggins America, let alone for like when that music hits. Just, this is the Manny Fry show right in the middle of Gwen Stefani.
But it's your segment, so you were setting yourself up.
Correct. But then I heard that the new Manny Fry show open doesn't even include my name. And I got a little bit offended. I'm not going to lie,
Ryan. It's tricky, Ethan, because you're not in every segment. So I wasn't really sure whether we should say Ethan for all of them. You know what we'll do? Mm. We'll make some new liners, some new drops that have your name so that if you're sitting here, Brad can play them. And if you're not, we'll play the other ones and you'll never know the difference.
Okay. It's like when Hannah
sounds great in theory.
It's like when Hannah didn't wear her hair headphones.
Yeah. We just assume that when Ethan's not in the room, he has no idea there's a radio show happening. That's what I'm implying. You ready for Wiggins America?
Yes, I am. There's
Wiggins! Oh! Monday Roundup! Yeehaw! This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is that it's about 50-50. If I hear my name, then I'm like, wait, what? Huh? But otherwise, the odds aren't great. Okay, Wiggins America, a little Monday roundup action. We're going to start off with sports before we get to the real tea. Yesterday, well, really all weekend, was the Masters.
Called it the tea.
He called it the tea. Yeah. He said real tea, and I was like real
the
tea?
The real tea.
Oh, real tea. Okay.
Yeah. He'll work with the Utes.
Yeah, spilling tea.
But speaking of teas, Rory McIlroy was hitting him real well off the tee this weekend. He ends up winning his first Masters, defeating Justin Rose in a playoff on Sunday. So I thought there was actually some interesting stuff about this Masters. Both were at 11 under par after playing the full 72 holes, so they went into a sudden death, which happens at these big majors.
Didn't
like
Rory kind of almost boof it twice?
He became the first winner of the Masters to have two double bogeys. His first day was not good, but he had this epic comeback throughout the rest of the weekend. Just goes to show how good he really is. So they go into a sudden death playoff on the 18th hole, where it's a par four, and McIlroy shot one under, and Justin Rose was the guy that got second. He ended up shooting a par. McIlroy won $4.2 million.
Ooh.
That is a record amount for the Masters, a $600,000 increase from last year, what Scottie Scheffler earned. The total purse for the tournament, $21 million. It's a pretty expensive purse.
$21 million is a lot, but it ain't Stacey Abrams money.
Listen, it is not a coach purse, right? It's not. What was the guy's name that we were
Craig T. Nelson.
It's not a Craig T. Nelson purse.
By the way, if you don't know what we're talking about, I pitched to my wife over the weekend because my wife's birthday is 2 days separate from Annie's, so it's real easy to remember all the women in my life. So it's really nice. So we were talking about how should we say it? She's not here.
She could be listening.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What are the chances?
So we were talking about how funny it would be to give somebody a coach purse, but it was just a purse with pictures of Craig T. Nelson from the show Coach on it. And I pitched that idea to my wife. Like, would you want this for your birthday? Because I know you'd rather spend the $40 on something else. And she's like, something else. Do not get me that purse. Like, okay, you're not going to get the
coach
purse.
On the show
purse.
On Friday, or Thursday, Annie said she definitely would carry that purse.
So maybe there's a future for that. All right.
So it was also a pretty significant win for McIlroy, but also just for golf in general, because with the victory, he now has achieved a career Grand Slam, which is where you have won all four of the major championships, which include the Masters, the Players' Championship, the U.S. Open, and then the Open Championship, which is the British Open. He becomes the second active player to do so, the other one being Tiger Woods, and only the sixth to ever do it. So, I mean, like, if Rory McIlroy wasn't the best ever to do it before this, he most definitely is now.
That was a pretty entertaining ending, right?
Super entertaining.
Because I called my dad in the midst of it. I wasn't watching it. Mm-hmm. And I called him, and he's like, no, I'm watching the Masters. So it must have been a really good,
Well, any time that you get down to a playoff, like, it gets pretty exciting there at the very end. But also the Masters, there's something different about the Masters. They don't allow phones. You have to keep your phones in
So have you ever been?
I've never been.
I got invited by a friend of mine who entered the lottery and won tickets in 2017.
Okay.
And it was really tricky because my wife was pregnant, and I'm like, honey, but he got tickets to the Masters.
It's the Masters.
And she said, go for it. So I did. But we went down there in 2017. I don't remember who won that year, but we weren't there for the actual tournament. We were just there for a practice round.
Sure.
But still, just getting to go down there was really cool. And I don't know if I've ever told this story before.
Sergio Garcia was the winner of the 2017 Masters.
I don't know if we saw him, but we saw a lot of him. We was walking around. And just being at Augusta is cool because, it's like you said, there's a really unique culture around that course and around that tournament. And the whole pimento cheese sandwiches, you know what I'm talking about?
I know that the food there is really cheap.
It's very cheap. It's like $2-3 for a sandwich, which they could be charging 40. And they're these pimento cheese sandwiches, if you've never heard of this, they sell it, you know, at Walmart and stuff, where you just, it's like egg salad, kind of. You just put it on a couple pieces of bread, and I was like, this is the greatest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. But it rained all day the day that we were there, and my buddy was so mad. I just felt like, oh, this is great. I mean, I got to walk around the Masters and just be there. But then we left, and because it's close enough to Atlanta, we drove. It was just constant rain. We finally got fed up with it, and they actually shut it down, so we couldn't really do anything. So we left. We drove to where they shot The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
We just drove around that stuff. That was like
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was
the
just
rain
as cool.
Probably made that even cooler.
Yeah.
If you can go on an overcast day whenever you get the shot of the bridge,
that's
super cool, yeah.
It's most of it's within a couple of miles of each other too. That show's been on for so long now that there's probably stuff that I don't even know what it is, but the early season stuff's all like the jail and all this stuff's really close together. All outside of Atlanta.
That's super cool. Yeah, no phones allowed into the Masters for the media either. They have to keep it, I guess, in the media clubhouse area. It just makes, I feel like it just makes it way more intimate. And
they should do that at movie theaters. Phones checked at the door.
Maybe the Minecraft chicken jockey wouldn't be such a huge issue.
You see the person set off fireworks in the theater at that point?
I did.
This is getting out of hand.
What is happening with stupid Minecraft movie?
Unbelievable.
You were the first person to report on it.
In fact, I felt really stupid the first day that it got brought up because I think it was during a Wiggins America. Yeah. It may have been last week's Monday Roundup. I randomly yelled, chicken jockey, and you guys all...
None of us knew what
I was saying. So then it got brought up again during Sue's News on the Mark Reardon Show, and I was like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to let it play out this time.
This is your trial ground for the afternoon drive.
Exactly. Yeah. Correct. So, that was kind of funny. Listen, there's no real good way of transitioning into this next topic, so I'm just going to say it. Katy Perry went to space this morning. Yeah, the pop, hold on, Brad. The pop star, Katy Perry, yeah, that one. She, journalist Gayle King, Jeff Bezos' fiance Lauren Sanchez, they were all part of Blue Origin's flight to the edge of space. Now, the Blue Origin is a company that is owned by Jeff Bezos, so maybe that is part of the reason why Sanchez was able to go, as well as a couple of other people.
Yeah, I would guess.
Partially owned by her as well.
But the trip is catching some heat from people on the internet that are trying to figure out what the purpose was behind this trip. And as far as I know, people are still trying to figure out that reason, Brad.
Ripped off by this Katy Perry space mission. I really thought this team was going to be in space for a substantial amount of time, not 2 minutes. This was the trip. This is the space that Katy Perry just went into.
It's a parabola, just up and down.
It wasn't even space. It was the edge of space. I mean, I hate to be a hater. I wouldn't have done this. I would have said, no, I'm not going. But they were there for a second. And I'm a Katy Perry lover, not a hater. Katy Perry, probably one of my number one crushes ever.
Amen.
Till this day. But she tweeted out, I love you. Like, she was going really up there, like all the way up there where those astronauts just got stuck. But no, this was just a simple little trip It was like roller coaster. You know the roller coasters that they have at the fair that are like small for kids? That's what they did. I just feel a little ripped off. That's it.
Kissed the ground?
Just a little. I forgot it was happening. I heard, oh, they're going up to space. I was like, oh, they'll be up there for a little bit. I was planning on making a TikTok. It was like, Katy Perry's in space right now. I would have, I had a 2-minute window to make it.
So it's already done? Yeah. It's already happened?
They were up there. It happened this morning. The trip in total was 11 minutes. They were from the ground to ground? They were technically in space for 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah, what is the point? I can tell you what the point is. It's so that Katy Perry could tweet out, and sorry,
I love you.
Sorry for little ears, but her quote was, I'm going to put the ass in astronaut.
God. So Lady Gaga had a tweet that has since been deleted that said, I've had farts that have lasted longer.
Lady Gaga tweeting about farts, I'm in. I didn't know that was ever going to happen.
Is my audio up, Brad?
Yep. You're
so,
good to go.
So Katy Perry had commented this morning on it.
It is the highest high, and it is surrender to the unknown, trust, and this whole journey is not just about going to space. It's the training. It's the team. It's the whole thing. I couldn't recommend this experience more. This is like up there with all the, you know, different tools that I've learned in my life, from meditation to the Hoffman process. This is up there because what you're doing is you're like really finding the love for yourself, because you got to trust in yourself on this journey. And then you're feeling the love when you come down, for sure. And you're feeling that strength. So I feel really connected to that strong divine feminine right now.
What does that mean?
You got to really trust
that
in yourself.
Strong divine feminine?
You just got to trust the Hoffman process, whatever the hell that is.
What does that mean?
Okay.
That absolutely killed me.
I love that she's just along for the ride. Like, her job is to sit in there and hang on. And she's like, you just really got to trust yourself.
That quote and just applied it to somebody she was talking about on American Idol, and it would have been the same thing. That's the same garble, positive, meaningless
and
stuff.
Here's the best part is now I'm starting to see articles that, like, historic first all feminine origin flight to space. I'm like, no way Katy Perry
piloted it, or was it just like autopilot?
I don't know that, but there's no way that it was Katy Perry.
Hopefully it was Gayle King. As you know, huge fan of Gayle King here, but Katy Perry,
Ryan's childhood crush.
yeah, my childhood crush went up too, Ethan.
Wow.
Hey, if you couldn't tell, this is the Manny Fry Show, and we'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.